today's show, talking Michigan, Washington, make our picks. Is this Harbaugh's last college game? How should a Michigan title potentially be viewed? Ohio State may have found a quarterback. There's a whole bunch of stuff in a people's court of a game that got out of control.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Grambling went straight Leviticus on the College of Biblical Studies.
Russ Dellinger.
They can keep Penix on the sideline, you know, which is the best thing possible for them is to just keep him on the bench.
And SI's Pat Forty.
At some point in time, maybe just leave Ohio State out of it and say, we're dealing with our own stuff over here. That's what I would like to hear.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, well, the pod national championship game is coming. Monday night, Houston, Texas. Michigan, Washington. What time is this thing kicking off? Anyone know?
Earlier than the Sugar Bowl. We know that. 7:30
Eastern. 7:30
Eastern? Yeah.
Oh, wow. Civilized. 6:30 local, right?
God bless.
Yep. Damn. Yep.
Thank
How about
you.
That? We might be done writing by midnight local. That would be great.
Thank Maybe. You. No, it's good. That's good. Let some people actually like be able to watch. I know. Crazy. Mm-hmm. Crazy concept. Although a lot of people, let's see, a lot of people watched Michigan, Alabama.
Heck of a
27.2 million viewers, most watched college football playoff game since Alabama, Ohio State in the inaugural semifinal 2014.
Mega number. What did we talk about last on the pod? I think the last pod we talked about how college football needs to get its act together and stop like acquiescing because it's number two. It's the number two sport nationally, and then they deliver the biggest non-NFL sporting event number since 2018.
NBA can't come anywhere near that. Baseball, nobody can come near that except the NFL.
Nope.
Yeah. The Grammys, the whatever, the Tonys. What's the big one? The movies.
Oscars.
Yeah.
Tonys are like the plays. Yeah, nothing comes bigger than this. Yeah, 27.2 million. Nice number. 33 it peaked at. Obviously.
18 for the Sugar Bowl?
18 for the Sugar Bowl. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. If you had played this thing at the right time, because that was just as an exciting game.
Oh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you had a built-in audience, and you botched it because of the sunset. But anyway, we move on. But anyway, great numbers. People want to watch. I mean, it's Michigan over.
The Rose Bowl. Rose Bowl was a perfect storm now. Michigan, Alabama, I mean, those are two massive fan bases, and it's the Rose Bowl. And so
overtime.
Yeah.
Legendary coaches.
Yeah.
Scandal.
Mm-hmm.
You name it. Yeah. It's the whole bit. It's the whole bit. And it really does help the sport when it's spread out. Like having a northern team and a southern team, having the Pac-12. RIP involved, you know, just having some geographic balance is, and obviously we're now next year, there'll be just two conferences, but just, I don't care. Having geographic balance is huge.
Yeah.
Because, you know, maybe it's, you're picking up some Ohio State fans that are hate watching. That's okay.
Oh, 100%. Georgia fans hate watching. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's doing it. I like how Ross is now saying the pod, like I say it.
The pod. Tulane, though. Right. I won't be it's saying Tulane.
Tulane. I've learned. I learned my lesson.
But it's not as good as him saying Dion.
No, I can't Dion. Do that. So let's start with this on the championship game. J.J. McCarthy came out talking about sign stealing. Got asked about it and did not play coach speak. God bless you, JJ. We love you for that. He said, I feel like it's so unfortunate. This is some question about the accusations or the scandal or however it was put to him. I don't want to say a crazy number, but I'd say a good number. 80% of teams steal signs. It's just a thing about football. It's been around for years. We actually had to adapt because in 2020 or 2019, when Ohio State was stealing our signs, which is legal and they were doing it, we had to get up to that level that they were at, and we had to make it an even playing field. I came out later and said that he did not mean that there was a organized effort to deploy Connor Stallions out. Some people took it as that. I don't believe Connor Stallions was chatting with J.J. McCarthy about the plan. J.J. also was not there in 2019 or 18, but at Michigan, or they believed that. Well, 2020, but they didn't play, so that wasn't even a game. But there's a long-held belief at Michigan that the Ohio State had Don Brown's defensive signs in 2018 and 19 and were able to throw some crossing routes that led them to score 62 points and 56 points or whatever it was in those games, which is a fair game. That's how the cookie crumbles. So, but it was an interesting quote. And I guess before I posit my question, any thoughts on JJ? They're not shy about this thing.
No. Well, the the thing that amuses me is how many times when Michigan has been put under the microscope on this, somebody has said, well, what about Ohio State? This time, right? The catapult stuff. Wait a minute. Well, we've heard some stuff about Ohio State. Now, nobody said that officially publicly, but that was clearly pointed that Ohio State has compromised the catapult system because they got people that work there.
Well, that's kind of the fans, right?
Well, yes. All right. But this is all coming from somewhere maize and blue.
Yeah.
Number three, Ryan Day's brother is behind the investigation. Number four, No, it's Ryan Day's high school teammate who's behind the investigation. Number five, they stole our signals first. I mean, at some point in time, maybe just leave Ohio State out of it and say, we're dealing with our own stuff over here. That's what I would like to hear.
Well,
not saying Ohio State is blameless in anything, but
that would be the mature approach.
Did you guys see the clarification, quote unquote, that J.J. McCarthy apparently provided ESPN's Marty Smith? Said it's about level the playing field and all that, and that Michigan was forced to disguise and camouflage our signs and all that stuff. Obviously this would be a big topic going into the game, and I'm sure we'll kind of talk about it. But the most interesting thing to me is what several things that, and this was Jim Harbaugh was asked about this on the teleconference yesterday a few times, but it was, how do you feel about what you're playing right now, the games that you're winning right now being, quote, vacated, at the end of the year. And apparently there's an NCAA, the NCAA rule book says that in order to vacate wins, you have to play in an eligible player. But it kind of leaves the door open to potentially vacate wins for something like this as well. So I'm kind of fascinated by that angle of the story. We're seeing kind of history play out here, but will it all be, quote, wiped out by the NCAA record books? But as we all know, and I don't know if you guys do it, but I just have for years rolled my eyes at vacated wins and vacated championships. I don't know. I mean,
totally don't care about vacated. Yeah. Louisville 2013, they won the basketball title. I saw it. Yeah. They did.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will say, though, people at Louisville care that they don't have a banner in their arena. They care deeply.
But how about this? They can't vacate a college football playoff.
No.
Championship because it's not NCAA.
It's not NCAA.
Run.
Right. Yeah.
They can vacate. Can they even vacate a playoff game?
That's a good question. From official NCAA statistics, they can. They do keep the stats.
Oh, that'll get them chapped because they'll no longer have 1,000 wins or something like that. I mean, listen, they got two Fab Five banners not up.
Right.
They're used to this at Michigan. I know about vacating.
Yeah.
One of my favorite on the Fab Five was I was talking to Jalen Rose once about it. And Jalen Rose, when he left Michigan, started a scholarship. He actually started four of them. So every year, Jalen Rose or his foundation or whatever gives, and still does it, he gives a full ride to some student in the state of Michigan, from the state of Michigan, to go to the University of Michigan. Pays their tuition, the whole thing. Some of them from Detroit, some of them from around the state, all different kids. And he's, I mean, I don't know, what Fab Five was, what, early 90s? So we're 30 years later.
30 years. It's awesome.
He said, I was officially banned from interacting with the University of Michigan per the NCAA, but I was paying the tuition of four kids at the school. I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I think we're missing the plot here somewhere.
Yeah.
Jalen Rose is not the villain. I don't know if they can. The thing about that rule about the advanced scouting, that's what you're violating, is advanced scouting. Yeah. It's extremely nebulous the way it's written. It's not. If they're going to like get into a lawsuit, and they're, I mean, what the hell? This is Michigan. Sure, there's going to be a lawsuit, or at least a threatened one. Define advanced scout. There's no definition. What's an advanced scout? Is your buddy filming the sideline a violation or not? It's a clear violation of the spirit of the rule, but the technicality, and then there's no corresponding punishment because they just basically were like, don't send. They couldn't comprehend it when they wrote it in 1993, I think it was, or nine is same time as Fab Five. It was just like, don't send your assistant coaches on the road to scout teams. And that, and back then, you know, the staffs were like 12 guys. So it was just sort of like, well, this just won't happen.
Yeah.
So they didn't really have a punishment. So I don't know if they vacate. I have no idea what they do.
Well, I do think like potential punishments for this is a fascinating subset of where this all is going and how much it could involve Jim Harbaugh and whether or not Michigan really should be worried that he's going to be sidelined for a significant part of next season or not. You know,
missed a significant part of this season. It works.
He did.
Yeah.
You know, but
Michigan just brushes this stuff off. I'm telling you, they're like the Goodfellas, you know, you get in there, you know, regular guys do that time. We get the lobsters and Paulie's cutting the garlic. Don't worry about this stuff. I don't know. I don't know what they're putting. I would think they'd go more onto Harbaugh than Vegas, but maybe they vacate.
I agree. No, I agree. And that's where it interests me. It's like, is there such a disincentive for Harbaugh to return with a potential punishment that's another reason he wants to go to the NFL? Maybe or maybe not.
So we'll get to the NFL. So here's the other question on this. Obviously, we don't know what the NCAA might do. But at what point they're 7-0 since the world learned about Connor Stallions. They have beaten four ranked teams. They have defeated Penn State, Maryland, and Ohio State without Jim Harbaugh. That was a punitive step to try to balance the advantage. You know, it's like sending someone to the penalty box in hockey, right? You committed a crime. We're going to try to even out the advantage you tried to gain. So they got that. They win all those games. They beat Iowa's ranked, but whatever. And then they beat Alabama. At what point does it mean they didn't break the rule? It doesn't mean they weren't advanced scouting or anything like that. But at what point, if at all, do all these victories lend credence to argument that this wasn't nearly the big deal, the big advantage that everybody was howling about for a couple weeks, and this wasn't the greatest scandal of all time? Look, we ain't had Connor Stallions, and Connor Stallions had nothing to do with Michigan dominating Alabama's offensive and defensive fronts last Monday. It had nothing to do with beating Ohio State or Penn State or whatever. Does that carry water? You said that, yeah, it was a violation, but this was a lot of screaming for something that wasn't as big of a competitive advantage as the howls would tell you. Pat?
I'd say First of all, yes, has Michigan justified the fact that it's an excellent team this season and could be the best team in the country? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they are good enough with or without Connor Stallions to be in this position and to win a national championship. Does not change the violations. Might have made a difference last year. Might have made a difference the year before. We don't know. We don't know whether it made a difference with what they had beforehand. But in terms of this season, they were good enough, which is another reason why it was crazy that they were, that Connor Stallions was doing what he was doing. Like, why on earth are you on the Central Michigan sideline to try to get intel on Michigan State, who was not good last year and wasn't much better, if at all, this year? You know, I mean, like the amount of overkill that I think went into this whole plot is really the strange part of it, because Michigan is clearly good enough and probably was last year, probably was the year before. We don't know for sure, but probably was. They probably didn't need Connor Stallions ever doing this to be as good as they've been.
Well, and that speaks to maybe what we discussed quite a bit on here is that, you know, is this an individual, one individual, right, that went out on his own and did things that were pretty unnecessary, you know, and had maybe more people known, it wouldn't have happened. That's certainly one angle. But I had a, it's funny, I had a text on Monday night or Tuesday from an administrator who I picked Michigan to at the start of the season to win the national championship. But I also picked USC to make the playoff, by the way. So they kind of negate each other. But this person texted and said, "Didn't you pick Michigan to win at the start of the season? Seems like you might be right. So why this massive sign-stealing scheme for a program that clearly didn't need it?" And I think, I think it's a good point, and it's one that Pat addressed there, and you kind of scratch your head. Like, I know coaches end, you know, if this was an individual effort, I know that support staffers, right? Everybody in football in general tries to get the slightest edge, right, up on everybody, and that's the only thing I can point to. You know, it's the only answer I got.
Yeah, I think the why is that these guys are over the top competitive, unhealthy levels of, I mean, they'll do anything, yep, right?
Yep.
To gain advantages, real or imagined. It would make more sense, to your point, Ross, if it was just Connor Stallions, it's just one guy being way over the top. It was brazen and all that. I mean, I think both. I think two things could be true. Obviously, Connor Stallions was their sign stealer, and everybody's got a sign stealer on their staff. McCarthy's right about that. 80%. It's probably higher. I'm almost assuredly higher, at least at the high major level. I don't know if they're stealing signs in Conference USA or something, but certainly in the Big Ten, everyone's got one, and they're sharing it. They're zipping it around. So he's their guy. He obviously was doing it because, you know, you don't keep doing it unless it helps you, right?
Right.
Or you think it's helping.
Yes.
So,
yes. I mean, the dude did get a game ball against Iowa or something last year. So he might, whatever value he had, he perceived it and other people perceived him.
Yeah. He was good at it. So, mm-hmm. So all of that is, you're doing it for a reason. You think it helps. And you got caught, and that's all fair game. I think my thing is, it's a colorful scandal. It just wasn't as significant. I felt like at the time, and I feel now, that it never mattered that much. And a lot of the crying and yelling was maybe not about how significant this was as much as it was, let's knock Harbaugh down or something. I don't know. But they've proven, I've said this, I've compared this in the past to Deflategate in the NFL, and I remember it. Deflategate hit, and people were saying Tom Brady should be banned from the Super Bowl. Tom Brady should be barred from consideration to the Hall of Fame. Patriots should vacate. You name it, right? And it was this was the thing that made Tom Brady Tom Brady. And he won 3 Super Bowls before Deflategate, and he won 4 Super Bowls after Deflategate. And eventually you just win so much that you're like, yeah, that really was a bunch of nothing. Even if it did happen, which I contend it probably didn't. But in this one, I would contend it most assuredly did happen. But I just think it's like, at some point, it's like, look, it wasn't that big of a deal. It just got drummed up because it was such a absolutely wild ass story, particularly when there was video and Stallions was on that MSU sideline and he's on the Central Michigan side and he's got the glasses. Like, it just overtook. But as everyone has settled down, it's like, yeah, that really didn't matter. They all are stealing signs. The advantage wasn't that great to the point where, now look, if they fallen apart in the last, well, they wouldn't have played 7 games. Right. But if they had limped in, you know, 2-4 or whatever the number would be, and they're getting beat, they're getting drummed, then fine. But they look really good. To me, the more they win, the more they minimize how big this was. That doesn't mean they didn't do it.
Well, especially when you win against, like, I'm just talking about specifically that the one game, right, against Alabama, where you win when really, like, yeah, there were some X's and O's plays and stuff, but like, you manhandled Alabama's offensive line, and you showed that physically you're better. So that was, I'm sure that's important, right, to the legacy of all this.
Yeah, I would bring up then, in terms of, you know, whether this was just Connor Stallions and his crazy scheme, we still don't really know fully why Chris Partridge was relieved of duty assistant coach. And, you know, I think that there's reason to at least need to find out a lot more how many people at Michigan knew about it, condoned it, were involved in it, whatever, because they thought they needed it.
Ongoing investigation. Absolutely.
Yeah. It'll be months and months of ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think people thought there would be some kind of resolution or news before the playoff arrived. And of course that never was going to happen, right? It was going to be, this thing is going to draw out to the spring, summer, maybe through next fall. You know, the Chris Partridge thing, yeah, that's really interesting. Remember he, you know, Dan and I reported about that he was alleged to have interfered, you know.
Well, at the very least, it says in his firing or his term, whatever letter, I don't know, termination, I don't want to use the wrong term, but that he discussed the case. Or discussed with players. He weren't supposed to discuss it. So we know that much, but yeah, we don't know. The investigation isn't over. Yep. So all we can go with right now. But the more you win, to me, the more ridiculous some of the screaming about how this was a 3 touchdown advantage. I mean, this would be one hell of a team if they had Connor Stallions, I'll tell you that. The greatest team ever. Connor at the Rose Bowl. See if he shows up at the national title game.
He doesn't have a whole lot of shame about him, I don't think.
No.
You know?
No. I don't think they, honestly, I don't think the whole play, they're all like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
They don't care. What are you going to do?
And he shaved his head, didn't he? He shaved his head bald.
New haircut? I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
It'd grow back, I'm sure. He's a Marine.
It was like, remember, wasn't Cecil Newton like supposedly not allowed to go to the championship game when Cam Newton played in it?
That was ridiculous.
Yeah. He ended up in there anyway.
That was there were so many. I mean, that was one of the worst NCAA, like, talk about overreach. Remember we did the thing where Kerry Kittles, the Villanova basketball player, had to do a press conference apologizing for using a long distance phone code to call his mom. Like, that's how much shame that the NCAA used to try to put on these pork. Can you imagine your son is in the national title game and you're not allowed to go because we think you might have taken some money? The audacity to tell someone you can't watch your son win the national championship. My God, you're banned from the Rose Bowl. I hope Connor, they should let Connor Stallion sing Mr. Brightside and direct the band.
You might. Don't put it past him.
Who knows? I don't think Michigan cares.
They win. They just might.
Michigan just don't care anymore. They're just like, eh, whatever. Said they love the Fab Five, too. All right. One more Michigan topic. Is this Harbaugh's last game? Ross? College game.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's coaching somewhere next year. Yeah. Suspended. Maybe not. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah. And my guess is, yeah, that this is his last college game. I guess maybe not forever, but certainly in this run at Michigan, I think he moves on to the NFL. We know the last two or three years he's kind of attempted, you know, he's flirted with some NFL jobs. He maybe even was a finalist for a handful. And whether he didn't get them or turned them down, I think there might be cases of both in different jobs. But I think this is probably the year. All of this together, you know, especially if they win the championship, you know, going out with a natty, you know, number one, the season that you had, and if you do close it out, number two, the, as you mentioned, right, all the NCAA stuff. I mean, there's a good chance. Take people back to the summer when we reported that Harbaugh had agreed to that 4-game suspension with the NCAA committee on infractions, or the NCAA.
Enforcement staff.
And then the 4-game suspension had to be approved by the committee of infractions and it was denied. So the NCAA in that thinking probably apparently thought he needed more than 4 games. He ended up, right, Michigan ended up suspending him for 3 games. And that was from the COVID dead period, recruiting violations. So, yeah. You know, the NCAA thinks he should be suspended for a couple more games.
At least 3 more. They want 3 more.
Yeah. So you think that there's that. And then there is, in addition to that, the sign stealing penalties, which could come from the NCAA. Remember, the Big Ten is the one who suspended Jim Harbaugh, not the NCAA. So you're looking at 3 to 6 games maybe next year that he's suspended for. And knowing that, that would be number two, right? Knowing that
man's getting indicted all over the place. Yeah. Go. Illegal bills for not actually committing a crime. Man's got millions of legal bills and he didn't actually commit a crime.
Tom Mars is deep sea fishing on his billable hours.
Billable hours, undefeated. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, yep. Ross.
I'm done.
Right. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Pat, last game, Michigan?
Yeah. If I had to guess, I would guess yes. He's got to have a landing spot. Somebody at the NFL has to say, yes, we want to hire you. I think the Chargers would be ideal. Go link up with Justin Herbert, play in that phenomenal stadium and get people there that way. I don't think you want to go play for the lunatic who is David Tepper, Carolina. There's going to be other openings.
Throwing drinks.
Yeah, throwing drinks at Jacksonville fans last seen. Very stable, man. You know, we'll see what else is available out there. But I think that is that, you know, that if there is a good landing spot, he would go. But he's got to be invited to go. I would imagine Michigan wants to keep him. But I think the suspension is at least 3 to 6. If you got to game this out a little bit, if the NCAA Committee on Infractions can rules that they want 2 more games from the first issue. And they want at least 1 from the second one, but maybe more than that because it's a repeat violator situation. Harbaugh basically thumbed his nose at the NCAA. You know, how bad do they want his skin on the wall? And the other factor here, so there's going to be strict liability rules that are in place. The one I don't know is there is a proposal that was put forward in October to be discussed at this convention here in like next week about coaches not just being suspended on game day, being suspended all week, which would up the ante. If he's suspended for 6 weeks, he's out for 6 weeks. Like, he's not coaching practice. He's not doing game plan footage, at least not in the office. He may be doing it all from home. And that could make a suspension much more meaningful than just having Sherrone Moore coach on game day. So all those things got to get factored in and figure out, you know, what's his incentive to go? What's his incentive to stay? My guess is he goes, but I'm just guessing because Jim Harbaugh's got to be the hardest person to predict in college football.
Yeah, 3-6 seems about right. I don't know if they could get to 6. Who knows? I mean, they don't like him. There's no question about that. Don't lie to him. They also have nothing to investigate except him. So I think they got a lot of guns pointed at him. He needs the Chargers to offer him the job. I mean, that's the big thing. They have right. to be willing to pay him.
Yeah.
Raiders. The other one he was really linked to, Antonio Pierce may keep that job. The Bears may be staying put. I don't think he was going to get the Bears job anyway, but you never know. People talk about it. Panthers obviously is open. Commanders could open. The Falcons could open. The Patriots, I don't see that. He needs someone to hire him. So,
right.
Personally, I hope he stays because, like I said, when I wanted Urban Meyer to come back, he's great for content.
Yeah.
But if I were him, I'd be like, yeah, look, you don't want me, especially if he wins the title. I'm out of here.
Right. Well, it's a pretty good sign that and it's been well reported, I think, that he has a contract extension, right? That he
has a contract extension with Michigan. He has not signed, and he hired Don Yee, who's NFL agent, Tom Brady's agent.
Right.
Yeah. So
a lot of signs pointing toward a move there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Keys to the game. Can Washington do it? I think they're still 4.5-point underdogs. Let's make our picks and discuss this game. Pat, you want to start? What do you think is the key to this matchup Monday night?
I've picked Washington throughout the playoff. I will continue to pick Washington in this game. I think there are several keys, though. Things that this, is, I think, can be significantly harder than beating Texas. And it was hard to beat Texas as we saw it go down to the last play. One, what is Dylan Johnson's health? That guy is a very important cog at running back. They don't run for 200 yards, but they use the run game to keep defenses balanced. They do box counts, and Michael Penix says there's not enough people in the box. We're running the ball. He is a hard runner. He does get in the end zone, so that's a key there. What does Washington's run defense do against Michigan's rushing attack? I think Texas probably didn't run it enough. Texas ran it well against Washington, 180 yards on 28 carries, 6.4 yards a carry. That's a lot. Oregon the game before, 6.2 yards a carry. Like, Washington's defense is not an iron curtain up front. They give up some holes. They give up some plays. So they're going to have to, you know, Michigan is not the kind of team that won't run it enough. They will run it until you stop it. And even then, they'll keep running it. So that's going to be the big imperative, I think, for Washington there. The thing that I think for the Huskies, do what you have done, especially the last two games and several other times really throughout this season. Get ahead and dictate the terms of the game to the opposition. You come out firing, you chuck that ball around, you get downfield and you score, and you say, teams, you're going to have to keep up with us now. Let's see what you got, because they're going to be able, I believe, to protect Michael Penix. They have all season. He's been sacked 11 times. He was not sacked at all by Texas. Some of that is like the line is really, really good for sure. But Penix is also, he's not a scrambler per se, but he's good at maneuvering in the pocket. And then he's got a quick release. He reads defenses. He knows when to throw it away. He makes quick decisions. He's not Jalen Milroe back there who's going to hold the ball, not see blitzes, wait, take, you know, keep retreating and then turn a 5-yard sack into a 15-yard sack. That's not Michael Penix. He's going to release the ball. He's going to find his hot routes. He's going to go deep to one-on-one matchups to the best receivers in the country. And Will Johnson can't cover them all. So I think there's going to be some advantages there in the passing game as there have been all year. And I think that's where Washington, especially again, if they get off to a good start, can say, we're playing our style. It's up to you to keep up with us, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, to me, Pat hit on it there. The big matchup to me is where these two teams maybe differ the most is Michigan's rushing attack against the Washington front. And that's the one where I feel like can be really exposed. Michigan can really expose that part of that. And not only in doing that, they can keep Penix on the sideline, you know, which is the best thing possible for them is to just keep him on the bench. Because, like Pat said, you know, that offensive line's been pretty sturdy, and he's just he's shown the ability to you know, evade pressure or know when it's coming, and his deep passes are incredible. So the best thing to do is keep him on the bench and run the ball successfully. And I think that's what separates the teams. And that's why I'm picking Michigan to win and cover. I picked them to start the season. Then I picked Alabama to beat them in the semifinal. Stupid Ross. But I think they win here and they cover. And I don't think it's a blowout, but I think it could be like, you know, a 7-10 to 14 point game, because I even in me saying that, just like when I picked Texas to beat Washington, I wasn't confident because of one guy, Penix, and lo and behold, he threw for 430 yards. So there's always that. But I think Michigan keeps the ball long enough to have Penix on the sideline long enough to win the game.
Sean, you want to weigh in on a pick?
Yeah, I believe that Washington will cover this game. They've done so much this season, and they've won really tight football games all the time. And that instills a lot of confidence to me that if there's a coach that's going to out-coach another, this year it's DeBoer. He has shown that late in games, early in games, when you needed somebody to take over and instill confidence in the team or the fan base, whoever, DeBoer can do that. So it's time for me to finally pay him his true respect, I think. I'll take Washington to cover. Michigan, incredibly dangerous, though. It should be a phenomenal game.
Yeah, I'm going to echo a lot of it. Tempo. If Michigan starts churning out 6-minute drives, 7-minute drives, and it, you know, it just puts so much enormous pressure on Penix. Texas rushed for 180 on him. Washington's giving up, I think it was 150 is their average this year. Let me check that. It was pretty high. 137. Michigan's rushing for over 150. That's the game. If Michigan's controlling the ball in the line of scrimmage like that, they're going to win the football game. If they are just taking time early, even if they stop, they will wear you down eventually. You kind of saw that against Alabama when they wanted to make stuff done. And so I think that's the key. I love Sharon Moore and the way he's calling games too. 4.5 points scares me. Betting against Michael Penix scares me. The reason I thought they'd beat, I think Pat and I, you and I picked Washington last week, Pat.
Yeah.
Beat Texas. And I think both of our, at least my theory was Penix will figure it out.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, he's got 3 NFL receivers. I don't know. This is a really interesting game. This is a really interesting game. But I think you get to a title game, run the ball. There'll be some aggressive play calls to shake things up. I think I'm going to take Michigan in this thing.
Another quick X factor for Washington's defense to watch out for is Quinn Ewers ran for a career-high 54 yards against them. Some key scrambles. And J.J. McCarthy could do the same thing. They're going to have to keep an eye on him, because there's a couple times like Ewers just had wide open field because nobody was even thinking he was going to need to be spied. But that won't be the case with McCarthy.
Also, Dylan Johnson, Washington running back, supposed to play. Kalen DeBoer said that he expects him to play. He re-injured ankle injury again, the Sugar Bowl. And, you know, that's something to watch, because if, say, Michigan shuts down Penix enough, which a few teams have this year, they've gotten pressure and they've kind of – and he struggled in a couple of games, which probably cost him the Heisman Trophy against Arizona State, maybe Stanford. There were a few games there. So if that does happen, you know, they got to lean on somebody, and they've kind of got a banged-up running back. So something to keep in mind as well.
All right, there you have it. We'll see what happens on Monday. Other news, got plenty of other stuff going on in college football. Will Howard, the Kansas State quarterback transfer, is, as we tape, at Ohio State. I don't think anyone would be surprised if he ends up being the Buckeyes portal pickup after the, which bowl were they in? Cotton Bowl, right? Whatever happened against Missouri.
14-3. They were not in the Cotton Bowl. Oh, Ohio State. Yeah. I thought you meant Kansas
State. Ohio State. Yeah, whatever happened against Sorry. Missouri.
Yeah.
That was the worst I don't ever remember seeing an Ohio State team look that bad. They clearly need a quarterback. They clearly need a lot. But big move here for Buckeyes heading into next season if they can get Will Howard.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, they are in an acute need here, which is again like the kind of the shock that of losing Kyle McCord. Is like, holy moly. First of all, you know, I think he could still have been the guy this next year. And without him, holy smokes, you better get somebody, because that was pathetic. Devin Brown got hurt early, and so they had to go to a third stringer. And let's just say that Florida State's third stringer is a hell of a lot better than Ohio State's third stringer in the emergency quarterback derby. So, and I felt sorry for Lincoln Kleinholz, who's thrown in, you know, rather abruptly there, but woof, 6 of 17 for 86 yards in that game. So yeah, Will Howard would be a big pickup. I mean, Ohio State's going to get somebody, and they do have Aaron Nolan coming in as a freshman, but nobody wants to go in counting on a freshman to be their guy. So you need that emergency, or not emergency, you need that established veteran to start spring practice with, and then let the chips fall after that.
Yeah, I hate to predict recruiting stuff, but I think this is kind of been a long time coming. I think around 2 weeks ago, Will Howard began to tell other schools that were recruiting him that he was not interested anymore, and it became apparent to those schools that he was going to at some point visit Ohio State. I don't know why it took so long, maybe just after bowl prep, whatever. Maybe they're waiting for the transfer portal to close, whatever. But he's finally visiting, and it sounds like this is going to happen. They, as Dan, Pat both said, they certainly need somebody. And Will did a solid job at K-State, and I think we all have to remember, that no matter who's at quarterback at Ohio State, you're going to have all these weapons around you. And so I'm sure that's going to help him. Although he had some weapons at K-State, it's going to be a lot more in Columbus. So this thing I think has been maybe done for a couple weeks, and I would expect it the deal to be closed here pretty soon.
That would be some good news for Buckeye fans that I think are looking on in puzzlement. 9 Alabama players have already hit the transfer portal since the loss, including center Seth McLaughlin. Not a big surprise. It's a lot of good high-level recruits. Alabama will be fine. They'll bring some people in, and they've got a whole slew of recruits coming as well. But the churn hits everybody, huh?
It does. And that, you know what I mean? Georgia had a ton of guys in the portal, too. Not all of them frontline players, but some of them were. And it's just – it's wild. I mean, those are the play. You remember – as we've said on the podcast, the portal and NIL is just going to send everybody to Georgia and Alabama. No, it sent some people away from Georgia and Alabama too. And there's going to be some very talented players who either haven't gotten a chance to play or haven't maybe lived up to their high school billing, who are now out there for other schools to pick up. And this is the way of the world in 2024 is everybody loses players. And just a little bit, a little bit eye-opening to see Alabama and Georgia there at the forefront losing a bunch of guys.
It is, and it also means that they're, you know, when you lose players to the portal, you got to go, a lot of times, got to go get players in the portal. So it also opens the door for Alabama and Georgia, whether now or maybe in the spring, after the spring or during the spring portal window, even maybe during the summer potentially to pick up some new additions.
All right. Also, NCAA convention later this week. Ross, what's the latest we can expect on some of the before we get to this People's Court? It's pretty good.
Dan, we can't go a whole pod without talking about legislation.
Is coming? Give us the big bullet points on what possibly could happen next week.
Yeah. So everybody kind of remembers right at a month ago to the day, I think, Charlie Baker released his proposal that would revolutionize Division I by creating a new The proposal has three concepts: creating a new subdivision, and within that subdivision, requiring those schools to pay into a trust $30,000 a year for half of their athletes. So that's one concept in the proposal. The other two is one, permits all D1 schools to strike directly with their athletes NIL deals. And a third concept permits all Division I schools to offer an unlimited amount of educationally related, quote, enhancements to their athletes. So there's those three concepts. The proposal will be reviewed and by the D1 board of directors at their meeting Thursday in Phoenix at the NCAA convention. The NCAA convention basically runs Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Next week, the big days are Wednesday and Thursday. So at their meeting Thursday, the D1 board of directors will review the proposal, discuss it. And according to the documents of their agenda, they'll determine whether to charge the Division I council or some other body to develop recommendations related to the proposal. So they're not going to take the exact proposal, right? And that was never a thought that they would do that. I think it was always a conversation starter. There's a timeline. It's a suggested timeline built into this. So the suggested timeline would be that two of the concepts in the proposal, which are to allow NIL and to allow educationally related enhancements, would be handled first by the D1 council if the board decides to do all this, and that could be done by the summer, by August. They could adopt these two concepts. The third concept, the big one, an FBS subdivision, could take about a year, at least according to this timeline. Again, it's only a suggested timeline, but it could take about a year. So to me, again, the proposal was kind of short on details when he released it last month, and it was intended as a conversation starter, but the inclusion of a timeline and all this stuff about charging the D1 council to review this and produce recommendations, it's a sign that college leaders are pretty serious about this and pretty serious about examining the potential to create real legislation and enact at least a version of this. And there's two other things real quick that the D1 board and the council will be looking at next week, changes and modifications to. One, their NIL policy, again, separate from Charlie Baker's proposal, is new kind of athlete protections, they're calling it. We've gone through this in the fall. They've been announced voluntary registry for agents, making mandatory athletes to disclose their NIL deals, standardized contracts. A lot of that will be adopted. And then for the transfer policy, I don't think there'll be anything adopted next week, but there'll be some recommendations that we reported about before and talked about on the pod, which is a real deep look at the NCAA's transfer rules, which are now, you know, in the middle of being attacked kind of by the courts. And so there's going to be a real look at getting rid of the year in residency, increasing transfer academic eligibility requirements, all that stuff. Nothing, again, will be adopted on that next week, I don't expect, but keep your eye on the transfer policy over the next few months, because it's probably going to undergo changes considering that it's the target of a lawsuit. So a lot happening there, but I think the two big things, like actual actions that could happen next week, is one, the D1 board could either say, hey, we don't like this Charlie Baker proposal, we're just going to shelve it right now. Or they could say, hey, D1 council, start exploring this thing, give us recommendations by the summer on the proposal. And then the second thing is approving these athlete protections for NIL, these registries, such like that.
Yeah. The Charlie Baker kind of caused such a massive ripple with that, but it's going to take a while to turn that into actual legislation, if it ever turns into it. I think it will. And I agree, Ross, that like at least having some timelines put out there and some tangible steps, like, okay, this is how we want to try to get at this, is a sign that that they are going to get at something. And part of it is absolutely at bayonet point from the courts. Part of it is, I do think, to continue to signal to Congress, yeah, we're working on stuff here, and please come with us. Please help us. Please protect us. Talk about protections. And so I think, you know, there is an urgency within the NCAA that is fairly legitimate. Now, you know what? Yes. Does that translate to, you know, big groundbreaking pronouncements next week in Phoenix? Probably not, but it'll start laying the groundwork to get to, are we really going to blow up this model and how much of it?
Going to be interesting. We will have time to debate the particulars of it, but I will agree there is a sense of urgency is finally here. We'll see how much urgency, but it's much better than tabling things that has been happening for, oh, I don't know, decades. All right, final deal here, and we can make this into a people's court at some point here, but they had a women's college basketball game the other night, Grambling against the College of Biblical Studies. Grambling. They hosted against the College of Biblical Studies, a small school in Houston, about 1,300 students. Obviously, it seems like the majors would be studying Bible, Biblical Studies. Grambling won 159-18.
Mm.
Not 118, 18. Like 20 minus 2.
A 141-point spread.
A 141-point spread. The all-time record. Largest victory of all time. Grambling went straight Leviticus on the College of Biblical Studies.
Dan.
I mean, you got to see this.
Deep box. In your bag of tricks there, Dan.
The box score. It's a tough one. 159-18? I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, Biblical Studies, 8-43, 1-13 from behind the arc. That's not good.
They have like 70 turnovers?
Lack of fundamentals. I'll get to the turnovers.
Okay. Mm.
Got to the charity stripe 14 times. Only hit one.
Ooh.
Good job, Desiree Fields. Gosh, you got one in.
Oh, no. 1-14 from the free throw line? Holy
cow. A whopping 57 turnovers.
Oh, no. I was holy joking when I smokes. Said 70. I wasn't far off.
57 holy turnovers. Amazingly, this could have been worse.
What?
Grambling can't shoot from behind the arc either. 5-24.
Mm.
They went 70-119 in regular field goals and 14-18 from the free throw line. This thing is the most epic. About the only good news is the attendance was 65 people at the game. Listed attendance.
How about that? How about that? The point spread in the game was double the attendance. Now that's got to be a record.
I would say
Actual spread. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That would do it. You're almost as many turnovers as fans.
Yeah.
Biblical Studies assist to turnover ratio 3-57. That's not.
Oh dear.
Bob Knight would not. Yeah.
Rolling
only
over.
Have eight women on the Biblical Study team.
I was going to ask, like, you know, yeah. Did they have more than five?
Not sure why this game was played. Now, look, we're a big tent here. We're a big tent here. We welcome all faiths, creeds, religions, non-believers. We don't care. We don't care. But was there a point? This would be it. The people's court. What if the Biblical Studies people are right? What if they're studying is the truth or whatever? This is did the Grambling risk like internal damnation beating them that bad?
The Grambling team is going to hell.
I mean, would there any point in the game you'd be like, maybe we should lighten up? Maybe they got like a
A direct pipeline. Yeah, I mean, what if the roof of the gym splits open and the voice of God comes through and a lightning bolt strikes the Grambling coach? I'd be at least a little concerned. I guess, does biblical studies offer athletic scholarships? Like, who are these people?
I'm thinking no.
How do you even find them to schedule them? Like, hey, you want to get in the van and drive over from Houston? It's not that far. They aren't paying a guarantee at Grambling, I don't imagine. Maybe they paid for, like, dinner and 65 mileage.
People there.
Yeah. No.
They've got some sports. They have, I don't know. Obviously, they've got a basketball team. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe they shouldn't have a basketball team. Maybe they need to spend more time with the Bible and less time with the basketball. Right.
I think they spend enough time with the Bible. I mean, if that's the whole school is biblical studies, I'm thinking you spend a lot of time with it. I don't know. These are like Bible vacation Bibles camp kids. I mean, you get on the bus home and be like, who scheduled this?
I would think you do. Yes, I would say thanks,
with your
Coach
Bible.
AD. Yeah, we'll pray for you for sending us to the slaughter.
I mean, this is 159.18.
It doesn't feel appropriate.
Good way to put it, Sean.
It is good get back for every long, hot service that you've sat in, where your sweater's sticking to your back. And you're like, how can I really complain? I'm in church, supposed to be nice. You're ready to go. You're ready for communion hall. You're ready for the donuts. So it's a little bit of
get me out of here. Yeah. Yeah, maybe
what
that was
the,
it.
Dan, what was the bishop school that played football that was the fake team?
Bishop Sycamore?
Bishop Sycamore. Yeah.
Didn't actually exist. To combine forces with college.
And there was no
studies.
Actual Bishop Sycamore. They didn't even pick a real bishop.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
but they
are we sure
on
there's
ESPN.
Really a biblical studies school?
There is a school. There is a school, and they got names here and everything. I don't know. Well, maybe they. I mean, seems like it. They got a Wikipedia page. That's more than Bishop Sycamore had, at least before.
Yeah, before.
I mean, this Alyssa Lowe, 4 from 10 from the field, 4 rebounds.
She's responsible for like half of
8
their points.
Huh? She had 8 of the 18. Yeah, only 4 biblical study ambassadors. That's what they're called, the ambassadors.
Ambassadors, I like it.
So they're nice people, but yeah. It's always nice to set a record. Always nice to set a record. All-time biggest college basketball score right there.
Do they need to ask for contrition there?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't, I don't want to say they should maybe they did. They did sit there and say, look, we don't want to anger anybody.
Maybe.
Just a little risky.
We've got several theologians / men of the cloth, probably women of the cloth who listen to the pod. Maybe they can weigh in on the.
We'll let them do. I don't know. That's a score I couldn't let go by. In case you missed the Grambling biblical study game, you weren't watching. You weren't one of the 65. All right. That is our show. We will have one after the national championship game. So you'll have one Tuesday morning at some point. We'll be all down in Houston looking forward to the big matchup. Should be very exciting. Appreciate everybody listening, subscribing, sharing us with your friends. Sharing us on social media, all of that, and we will talk to you later.